You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined for the first time, I believe, by Sean McFate, a man who has distinguished himself in uniform as a paratrooper with the glorious 82nd Airborne Division. He also served as a contractor with outfits like DynCorp International, and in the course of both of those capacities, of course, was about the nation's business, doing hard things, often in the dark of night. He has written about these experiences and his insights, arising also from his experience as a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and as an associate professor at National Defense University and my alma mater, the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, in a new book entitled The Modern Mercenary, Private Armies, and What They Mean for World Order. Sean McFate, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Thank you for all of this service to our country. It's deeply appreciated, and I know it has, as I say, informed the thesis of your new book. Give us a flavor of what you mean by modern mercenaries and the important role they are playing at the moment in the nation's security.
Sure. Well, this started because I myself was in the private military industry, which our country has used extensively in Iraq and Afghanistan, and others are using it around the world as well. And I think the industry has gotten, in some ways, a very bad rap, and I wanted to sort of give an insider's insight into what the industry does well, but also flag from insider's point of view some of the deep concerns about the industry, too.
And in terms of the good, let's start with that. At a time particularly when the resources of the United States military are being severely constrained, shall we say, obviously this private military industry, as you say, has become increasingly important. How important?
Well, sure. So the industry, by and large, is cheaper to use than the military, just like renting a car is cheaper than owning one, right? And this is historical, too. We have a lot of historical examples of this. They can do some things better than the U.S. government can. They are not beholden to red tape in the same way the U.S. government is, or they're not fighting, you know, bureaucratic turf wars. When I was a contractor in Africa, we built an army for Liberia, a small West African country that is still standing today and doing reasonably well. And I could do things as a contractor that I really couldn't do if I was still an officer in the U.S. Army because of bureaucratic red tape. So there are some advantages to using this industry in terms of cost-cutting, effectiveness, private sector innovation, et cetera. So we all remember Blackwater in 2007, which killed 17 Iraqi civilians at Nisour Square in Baghdad. You know, from the locals' point of view, they can't tell the difference between Blackwater guards and, say, U.S. military Marines. They all look the same. They're all Americans. They're all carrying weapons. So, and that became a huge catastrophe for the U.S. in the region, where we had the Secretary of State having to apologize to the entire region, which as a superpower is, you know, not good. Congressional inquiries, questions of who actually controls these military contractors, the lack of transparency. I mean, in some ways, these companies are a lot more opaque than the CIA or the Pentagon, because if you're a journalist, you can do a Freedom of Information request for the CIA or the Pentagon, there's congressional oversight committees, but for the private sector, there's none of that, and they could hide behind the fact that everything they do, they claim is proprietary knowledge, is trade secrets, so you don't really know what they do. And this is one of the reasons, I think, why the executive branch and others can be attracted, in fact, to the industry, because it affords them a sense of plausible deniability in case something goes really bad, and it creates moral hazard in public policy making.
And that moral hazard bit is a piece that I'm particularly interested in. To the extent that one of the advantages of these military contractors is, as you said earlier, that there's less bureaucratic red tape, there's, well, less oversight. Do you find that the abuses are arising from government direction to some extent, or turning a blind eye to some of the conduct, or is it simply something that is done when things just go frightfully badly within one of these companies?
Well, I think there's three reasons why you have problems like this. The first is that these companies are operating in really complex environments. You know, to be fair to anybody working in conflict-torn Iraq or Afghanistan, you know, things don't go according to plan, but that's not an excuse, right? The other two reasons, I think, is that the government itself has failed to manage a lot of these companies. And, you know, it's easy for journalists to blame the industry for fraud, waste, and abuse, but we also have to look at the other side of the equation. Who's managing? There's still not a regulatory framework for using these companies overseas. How the Pentagon does it is very different than how the State Department does it. It's almost like a left-hand, right-hand problem. But lastly, these companies, you know, these are private sector companies, and they also have some role in this because there's a conflict of interest between, you know, public sector ends with private sector means. Companies are motivated to basically elongate conflicts for profit, or, you know, historically in the past, not in United States of America, to even start conflicts. And we see this a lot in the Middle Ages, where war was fought mostly by mercenaries. And what happens in a world where you fight mostly with mercenaries is that there's not surprisingly a lot more war. And this is the concern I have with the book, is what direction are we going to post-Iraq, post-Afghanistan?
Yeah. Let me just ask as another case study, Syria. It is a place where I assume contractors are involved in some of this training that we're doing of so-called Syrian moderates or Syrian rebels. You've correctly, obviously, Sean McFate, captured the complexities of operating in some of these environments. In Syria, I think it's particularly difficult because who knows whether any of these people, in fact, are moderate or likely to remain aligned with us once trained. The record so far is not very good. Just as a prescription, really, going forward, based on your insider experiences chronicled so well in The Modern Mercenary, Private Armies and What They Mean for World Order, what would you recommend be done to try to make this, particularly in this case perhaps, but more generally, work as properly and adequately as we can do?
Well, I mean, first, there's sort of two parts to that. The first is, what is the wisdom of this policy of, you know, training local fighters to fight on our behalf? We, as you say, we don't have a good track record, and security force assistance is not something that the military spends a lot of time wanting to do. I think our military, in my opinion, its core identity is a military of assault and not occupation. And security force assistance is basically occupation. Second of all, you don't know, like, who you're training and equipping. You know, today they could fight for you, tomorrow they could fight for somebody else. We've seen this in Afghanistan, right? So there's the question of that. The second question is, who are the contractors? How are they vetted? How are they trained? How do we know they're competent? And this is a problem you see in the private sector around anywhere. You know, what's the due diligence process? I think the government's really bad at due diligence. They basically they keep on rehiring incumbents whether or not they perform well, because it's bureaucratic inertia is what it is. But the other thing about Syria, which is really interesting, is that there's also contractors and mercenaries on the other side. There's rumors of Russian mercenaries operating in Syria on behalf of the Alawite regime. And we're in a world now where, after the U.S. has used private military contractors, we're seeing outright mercenaries, which are different, starting to appear around the world. Nigeria just hired a group of mercenaries to go after Boko Haram, a radical extremist Islamic group in North Nigeria. 6 years, the Nigerian military could not deal with Boko Haram, and in a few weeks, these mercenaries forced them out of the country.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Sean, a lot more to talk about on all of this, and I hope you'll indulge us by coming back soon, because I think, as you say, there are vexing questions here. And the distinction between mercenaries on the one hand and these private military industrial types is one that I'd love to explore with you further. In the meantime, thank you very much for joining us today and for this terrific book, The Modern Mercenary, Private Armies and What They Mean for World Order. Next up, we'll speak with former governor and White House Chief of Staff John Sununu about new world orders, past and present, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.